Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, May 19th. New York Times has an article now pointing out that the country is doing the best at holding down coronavirus cases and coronavirus deaths happen to have women as their heads of state. In New Zealand, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who was quick to put the entire nation on lockdown as of March 25th, has become New Zealand's most popular prime minister in a century for practicing an abundance of caution in the early days of the virus. News reports suggest the country has effectively eliminated coronavirus. Germany and Taiwan, with women in charge, have had far greater success than their neighbors in stemming the tide of the pandemic. Finland, if you want to look at Scandinavia, has had 10% fewer deaths, and they have a woman head of state compared to Sweden next door with a man. Now, granted, this is a very small sample, but it at least raises a question, and it certainly raises a contrast with a certain male president who seems to find the idea of wearing a mask against his idea of looking like a real man.
Well, I just don't want to wear one myself. It's a recommendation. They recommend it. I'm feeling good. I just don't want to be doing, I don't know, somehow sitting in the Oval Office behind that beautiful Resolute desk, the great Resolute desk. I think wearing a face mask as I greet presidents, prime ministers, dictators, kings, queens, I don't know, somehow I don't see it for myself.
I don't know. Somehow I don't see it for myself. Trump on April 3rd. So let's look at what Taiwan, Germany, Finland, and New Zealand have in common. Joining me now to discuss what we can and maybe what we cannot learn from that information is Amanda Taub, writer for the New York Times Interpreter column. Her latest article in the Times is titled, Why Are Women-Led Nations Doing Better with COVID-19? Hi, Amanda. Thanks for coming on today. Welcome to WNYC Today.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
You write about how after President Trump was criticized for not wearing a mask, David Marcus, a writer for the conservative website The Federalist, wrote an article about how Trump was, quote, projecting American strength. Do you see that as coded in gender terms?
I definitely do. I think that there is a kind of a traditional idea of what a strong leader looks like that is very tied to masculinity. And it's played a really strong role in American foreign policy with this idea that the United States must always seem resolute, must project power, must never waver, and always show resolve. And that has very much been tied to the idea of a kind of personally strong and masculine leader. And I think one thing that's really interesting about this is that even though there's a lot of debate among political scientists about whether resolve is really useful in the foreign policy realm, it definitely isn't useful against viruses. That whole model of leadership is just designed for a completely different kind of crisis.
So let's get into the specifics of some of these countries with the women heads of state who are doing well. You compare Germany's approach, for example, with that of nearby male-led Sweden and Britain. How did their approaches differ?
So Germany has taken an approach that was really marked by gathering information from a lot of different sources, listening to a variety of experts, and putting in place a kind of multifaceted plan to keep deaths down. And so even though they've actually been hit quite hard by the virus itself, they have had a much lower death rate than the rest of Western Europe. And you can really contrast that with, for instance, Sweden and the UK, whose governments took a much more kind of laissez-faire approach that was much more focused on saying, you know, we don't have to worry about this. It's going to be fine. We'll get to herd immunity. And so they were much slower to put in precautions for their populations and have had much higher death tolls.
And you wrote something about how the male-led countries relied primarily on epidemiological modeling by their own advisors with few channels for outside experts. How does that translate to a gender critique?
So one thing that the experts I spoke for this article pointed out is that countries that have women as their leaders, because that is still a relatively rare thing, it suggests that there's something unusual or special going on in those governments, that they are maybe a little bit more flexible. They have channels that bring a more diverse group of people into political power, and that that could be a signal that they are also open to more channels of information, as Germany is, which is led by a woman. And it is true that there have been a lot of reports and critiques of the British and Swedish governments saying that they are not paying enough attention to other epidemiological models and other sources of information, such as interviews with hospital staff kind of reports of the possible efficacy of test and trace programs, etc.
And you're right about how Tsai Ing-wen, the Prime Minister of Taiwan, or President of Taiwan, has presided over one of the most successful efforts at the world in the world at containing the virus. Pretty incredible in that part of the world, because obviously they're right near China, which is where it started. So what did she do better than others in the region?
So one thing to say is that the region there has in general done quite well at containing this virus. And I think that that is because they had the previous experience with SARS, which had kind of given their health systems practice with this kind of severe, dangerous outbreak of a respiratory disease. But what Taiwan has done especially well is they put in a really robust program early of testing and contact tracing, so that the disease never got out of control there. It never reached such widespread infection that they had to turn to a nationwide lockdown in order to control it.
Let's talk about Boris Johnson. You write about how in Britain, Prime Minister Johnson used the same approach for his Brexit strategy as he did for fighting the pandemic. He wanted to play, quote, hardball. Can you talk about what that means and what the result was?
Well, so I think it's less that he was trying to use the exact approach and more that Boris Johnson had developed a style of politics that was really well suited to something like the Brexit negotiations. He's very, you know, he can be very confrontational. He's brash. He's, you know, always prided himself on playing hardball in negotiations, but this is not a hardball situation. You obviously can't play hardball with the virus, but the UK has also found itself falling behind on areas of cooperation, such as participating in EU-wide schemes for acquiring medical equipment. And the government has said that those were errors, that they were mistakes, but I think that what it kind of shows is that if you have in effect, a wartime political structure designed for conflict with outside countries, even though it's not a military conflict in this case, it's difficult. It's a different skill set. It's a different set of institutions to turn to this kind of internal biological threat and protect the population.
And how about the New Zealand case? It could be the most interesting of all of them. Jacinda Ardern is the prime minister. She was quick to put all of New Zealand in lockdown and to close off all its borders, halting domestic and international travel, even from nearby Australia. But when President Trump tried to close off travel from China first, he was met with immense backlash. And that could be just a reflection of hyperpartisanship in the U.S. But is there a case to be made that when a woman takes sweeping measures, what some in this country might even consider authoritarian measures, that the action might come across as less aggressive? Is there something there?
Well, I think in the case of President Trump, his actions were being considered in the context of his presidency and also what he was and wasn't doing in order to combat the virus. And so obviously President Trump has a history of wanting to cut off travel and borders for any number of things. And so I think he maybe did not have as much of the benefit of the doubt, particularly among people who are not supporters of him, that that would be an appropriate measure to control the outbreak of this virus, especially as he was, you know, saying around the same time that it wasn't anything to worry about. I think that didn't inspire a great deal of confidence. And what New Zealand did was a little bit different, because it is true that they put the country into lockdown and cut off outside travel, but they also instituted a really robust program of testing and contact tracing And really encouraging people to stay indoors, do their part to prevent the spread of the virus. The prime minister referred to the country as a team of 5 million people. And so I think in that sense, closing off the borders came to seem more like just part of a shared sacrifice and less like a sort of Band-Aid that was blaming outsiders, which many saw President Trump's actions as.
Interesting. We're just, listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Amanda Taub from the New York Times for just a few more minutes. You're in the UK, right?
I am, yeah.
And her article that maybe you saw is Why Are Women-Led Nations Doing Better with COVID-19? One of the sections of your article is called Escaping the Gender Double Bind. What's the gender double bind?
So the gender double bind is that when we focus on this one narrow idea of what a strong leader looks like, these masculine characteristics of being very tough and aggressive and, you know, not backing down from conflict, those are characteristics that men are praised for. But women are in politics and in other areas of life, when they exhibit those characteristics, they're seen as irrational, hostile, mean, unreasonable. And so those characteristics, when they're prized in politics, have been kind of a barrier to women's rise in politics because they get met by this gender double bind of, you know, you're expected to do this, but if you do it, you get criticized. But again, because it turns out that a totally different type of leadership is very useful for this particular type of crisis, one that requires careful management of risk, cooperation with other nations, listening to diverse voices and weighing different sources of information, women who were not subject to the pressure to conform to the male ideal in the same way, because in fact they were punished if they tried to conform to it, now have a clearer path to being this new kind of leader, offering that new, more effective approach in the face of this particular type of threat.
And I guess we should say that this theory that women are doing better than men when they're in charge in the COVID-19 period did not apparently apply to governors' track records in the United States. While we in New York are analyzing whether or not Governor Andrew Cuomo acted quickly enough, you spoke to a political scientist at Tulane University who told you that she found that women were not quicker to impose lockdowns to fight the epidemic, those women who are governors of U.S. states. Why does she speculate that is?
So that's right. What she found was that there wasn't a difference in gender. This is Ruth Carlitz at Tulane University. But there was a difference by partisanship. And so her hypothesis is that because political partisanship is such a strong force in the United States right now, it's essentially drowning out other factors, such as, you know, whether having a female leader might be an indication of a more flexible and diverse leadership structure, that partisanship right now can kind of trump it all. And she also pointed out that looking at governors is a little bit different from looking at heads of state, because, of course, all of those governors are either part of the same party as our current male president in the United States, or they are in, you know, the party that opposes him. And so it's not exactly the same type of situation. But one thing that I think it does illustrate is that this is not just as simple as women are one way, men are another way, that these are really indicators of how broader societal factors, gender norms, and institutions can have a really important effect in this kind of crisis.
Interesting that we're in such a hyper-partisan state in this country that partisan roles seem to weigh more heavily than gender roles in determining a leader's response. So before you go, you generalize this out beyond COVID-19, or at least you raise that question, and you write this style of leadership represented by Angela Merkel and Tsai Ing-wen and Jacinda Ardern, and who am I leaving out, the Prime Minister of Finland, may prove useful in cases like a natural disaster linked to climate change. Why do you bring climate change into it?
So the reason that I bring that up is that climate change represents another example of a crisis that is not going to be responsive to aggressive negotiation tactics or to projecting power and resolve. It's not going to be responsive to that kind of typical masculine leadership style and leadership ideal. Instead, that's another type of crisis, like the pandemic, that's going to require a lot of careful risk management, weighing of what sacrifices can be made now for benefits later. It's going to require cooperation. And so I think this is a type of leadership which, to be clear, men can practice as well. This is not something that only women can do. But men, as we've seen with President Trump, can have a double bind of their own, where if they don't seem to be projecting aggression and masculinity and resolve, they can be criticized for seeming weak. And it seems that women, because of the separate gender norms that they are subject to, don't have that particular barrier in front of them as they pursue that type of leadership.
Recognizing both the female and male gender double binds, Amanda Taub from the New York Times, whose article is titled, Why Are Women-Led Nations Doing Better with COVID-19? You can see her work generally in the Times Interpreter column. Thanks for interpreting this for us.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.